This is Henrik Palmgren. I hope you are comfortable wherever you are in the world. If you're out driving, taking a walk, or maybe surfing in front of your computer, a warm and human welcome to all our listeners. Today we are going to talk with Aaron France, who is behind the film Age of Transitions. He's been with us before, back in December last year. It's almost been a year to the day since we talked with Aaron last time. He's been starting up a few new projects that we're going to discuss today. Trans Alchemy, Save the Humans, a website dedicated to the subject of transhumanism, and as far as I understand it so far, an effort to save what we know as the human being. The question is if we are slowly being phased out with all the genetic engineering, computer brain interfaces, and other intrusive technologies. Is the human being slowly being replaced by a, shall we call it, a new version? Aaron is also working on a new film project right now. They've got access to the Singularity Summit this year, and they've done interviews with people who attended that conference. They have a few teasers of these interviews available right now on their website, transalchemy.com. They've talked with Professor Dr. Hugh DeGaris, Nick Bostrom, Aubrey de Grey, just to mention a few, on the topics of artificial intelligence, genetic engineering, life extension technologies, and transhumanism overall. So this is some of the stuff that we'll go into deeper in detail here today with Aaron. So with that, welcome back to Red Ice Radio, Aaron France. How have you been since we last talked?
I've been great. Thank you very much for having me back on, Henrik. It's great to be here. And like you say, I've been working on www.transalchemy.com with Carlos, my associate, who has also been making videos on the same subject. So we've joined forces, and now we're working together and making many short videos that the All-Seeing AI is one of our latest productions, as well as we're working on the documentary film, which you spoke of as well. We got the interviews at the Singularity Summit from various experts in the field of transhumanism and related things, all things singularity.
Excellent. And what about the new website? That's fairly new started, Trans Alchemy. I guess you had your YouTube channel before. You made the, as I mentioned, the Age of Transitions, and then you joined up with Carlos and quickly went over to transalchemy.com. Is that your main website these days, Aaron?
Yes, www.transalchemy.com is the main website. There's also a blog attached to that, transalchemy.blogspot.com. And the blog is loaded with posts that we've done. If you've never been there before, there's an extensive archive of posts we've done, all sorts of interesting topics in there. We've also done text interviews, internet interviews through email that we've done with various experts that we're now also getting video interviews with. So we've spoken to these guys many times now, which is very good.
That's very good. It's going directly to the source, as it were, of some of these subjects. And why don't you just, let's say we have some listeners with us today who doesn't know anything at all about the subject. Maybe you can just paint the picture for us and what you guys basically are trying to alert people to when it comes to your website, TransAlchemy, and the work you're doing there, Aaron.
Okay, well, transhumanism, first of all, it's a fairly new idea, but with the new aspect of it, it also goes back to an ancient idea as well. But the new idea is merging human beings with machinery, mixing technology and human biology to create a new cyborg amalgamation, and also using technology and science to come up with life extension technologies, things of this nature, virtual realities, and improving our life ideally with this technology. That's the idea of transhumanism. Now, us at transalchemy.com, we come at this subject from a very interesting point of view, because a lot of times people who talk about transhumanism, they get pigeonholed into the scientific realm, and they get they stay completely with the science, and they don't confront the philosophy and the roots of where the philosophy came from And once you get into the philosophy, you get into a lot of interesting mystic principles as well, and all sorts of crazy things and doors open up when you really take a look at it, because it's connected in with everything, this transhumanism idea.
It absolutely is. And first I actually would like to just ask a little bit generally about the Singularity Summit. Where was it held this year, and how was it to attend the conference? Did you guys look at the speeches there as well, or did you just focus on getting interviews with some of these guys?
The conference was at, it was in New York City at the 92Y. We didn't really look at any of the presentations. We were focused on getting interviews, and we were speaking to people, meeting a lot of interesting people. We were very lucky to be there. We got the press pass to get in there. We're actually very grateful to Singularity Institute for having us there. And we got a lot of very interesting interviews with, I'm trying to think how many people, probably about 8 different interviews we got. So it was very useful.
And what about you guys' background, so to speak? Did the Singularity Summit, the people there, kind of ask you about what angle you had, or how you were coming to this subject, so to speak? Did they know about that?
Yes. I met one individual who was just a regular medical doctor. This is an interesting story. He just happened to be at the summit, and he said, "Oh, are you into crazy stuff? Like, these guys are crazy here. Are you doing crazy things too?" You know, so he was, I'm not sure what his deal was, but I was basically like, "Yeah, I'm kind of into crazy stuff." And he was saying how this is basically the creation of Skynet, and humans are going to be gone, and it's all crazy. And he's being funny, but at the same time, it was serious too.
A little bit alarming in that sense. But so what was it to interview some of these people? You know, if we talk about maybe Nick Bostrom or Aubrey de Grey or Degaris or some of these guys, just tell us about it, Randley. How does it feel to talk to some of them? Do you think they're in a, how should we put it? Are they simply good guys who have pipe dreams, so to speak, or are they really more serious? And do you think that some of the research that they're doing, that they really are, it's really something to it, and they really actually are going to achieve this in one level, if we talk about the seriousness of the subject, so to speak?
Yes, it's absolutely serious. And no, I would not call it a pipe dream, because what they're working on is absolutely real. I didn't actually get a chance to speak to Hugo de Garis or Nick Bostrom, but I did speak to Ben Goertzel, a good friend of de Garis. And he's also an AI developer. He's very interested in AGI, which is artificial general intelligence. And that would be the creation of a machine that can think at a level, a human level or greater. Basically, a machine that can decode patterns and make sense of it, and also change its own patterns of thought. So it can adapt its own thinking. It's not a narrow AI. Like, a narrow AI system is designed to do a specific task. It can go through a bunch of data and pick out useful amounts, useful patterns in that data to use it in a certain way. But artificial general intelligence can actually think in the way that we talk about human thinking.
Hmm. Interesting. And some of the other people there as well. I mean, so you didn't get to speak with Nick Bostrom?
No. We Carlos saw him briefly at the World Science Fair, I think it was, which is another event in New York City a few months earlier, but it was only briefly.
All right.
We did speak to Anders Sandberg of the Future of Humanity Institute as well, which is works alongside Bostrom there at Oxford.
There you go. And what's your take on Sandberg? What's he specializing in?
His specialization is also in the uploading idea, putting a human brain or getting a human mind into a machine. Basically, that's the idea. Can you actually emulate mind thinking and possibly consciousness? That's a difficult word to use, of course, because nobody really knows what consciousness is. It's open interpretation, but basically recreating consciousness, recreating mind, life with a machine, with technology.
There you go. So what if we go into some of the roots, some of the philosophy, and basically what is driving this mentality? You mentioned that you guys have a different approach to it. You don't stare yourself blind only on the scientific aspect of this, but actually look at the philosophy behind it. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that, Aaron.
Yes, well, that's very interesting because you take a look at the quotes of a lot of these people, and they you see certain themes pop up again and again. One of them is the idea of building gods and also of becoming gods. And with the creation of mind and new forms of life, it's easy to see how man becomes a god in that sense. He creates a new creature, possibly an artificial intelligence machine. That machine becomes as smart as man. So that is the act of creation, as it were. And the idea of becoming a god is very much a part of transhumanism, although it can be a little bit tricky when you overtly ask this question. Some interesting things come up, because I spoke with James Hughes in interview two, who is the executive director of the World Transhumanist Association. He was, but anyway, I asked him they say that transhumanism has everything to do with logic and reason, but at the same time, I pointed out that they talk about becoming gods too. Mm. So, you know what I mean? Like, how does that work? How do you stay scientific and empirical while at the same time saying, well, we're going to become gods, we're going to build gods too? How do you do that? And he told me that, basically, when you hear transhumanists talk about building and becoming gods, they're just materialist atheists, and they're pushing the buttons of theists. So he's just saying, you know, they're having fun. They're kind of making fun of religion and theist ideas, and the idea of becoming a god is just it's a little lark for them, and they're just being funny. I got stuck right there.
Well, it's all right. I think I know what you're kind of alluding to a little bit, Aaron, as well, because it seems that they're using religious and kind of theological terminology in order to explain this. And although the excuses, as you say, to just push the hot buttons of all the religious people, that's what they're trying to do. That, but actually, I think behind their intention of making these things, building these machines, and taking the science in this direction, unconsciously at least, there is a little bit more kind of a different kind of power drive behind there, which actually might have some religious connotations. It's because who wants to strive to become a god, right? So it becomes a little bit tricky right there. And did anyone respond to that in a coherent way, so to speak, or does everyone dismiss it, the guys that you talk to, Aaron?
Yes. Well, actually, yeah, now I'm back on my train of thought, because the idea is actually a religion. It's mystic, based in the mystic tradition of the ancient mysteries as well, because Goetzel, who I talked to, who has talked about becoming and building gods, he's very much into the idea of cosmism. So cosmism is basically this transhumanist philosophy, scientific synergetic philosophy is what he calls it. So basically, it's science, religion, and philosophy all mashed up in one. And the idea of cosmism is that everything is conscious, and we as humans want to reach out and merge with that consciousness. And this is a theme that you see throughout the mystic tradition, things like Kabbalism, things of that nature. So, and he's very serious when he says this. He says, he told me, Goetzel told me that, well, look, I believe that everything is consciousness. Like, all this stuff around this chair I'm sitting on is conscious. Everything has different levels of consciousness. And what cosmism seeks to do is find greater levels of consciousness and seek to attain them. And you can do that. One way to do that is build an AI, and a self-replicating AI that builds its own consciousness and becomes more and more conscious as it becomes more intelligent.
Hmm. What about the difficulty with these things, whether or not they will actually achieve this? I mean, that's interesting in itself, but it still has to be programmed by a human being. And in some way, then, to me, it means that it will also have the flaws, if you will, of the human being in that sense, or the flaws, but it will contain the set of intelligence that we have. Or do you know if they think that these machines will evolve themselves, so to speak, because they can write their own code, they can better themselves, they can become they can upgrade themselves, and hence they will slowly move away and even become more than human intelligence. They will become even smarter than human beings, Aaron.
Yes, that is the idea. And yes, they do believe that machines will become smarter than us. And more than that, there's the common belief among transhumanists that I found that human beings aren't good enough. We're designed by evolution, supposedly. Our psychology, evolutionary psychology, is that we've evolved to live in a certain way, and this evolution has actually hindered us from real progress because evolution isn't fast enough, you see. So we're stuck in this natural state of being, this natural human state of being, because of certain biological factors that we can't control now. So we're actually being held back by our genetics and our evolutionary past. So the idea is to get beyond that, and then artificial intelligence would be beyond that from the start, because you could design it to be within certain parameters, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But also AI, they expect, would go beyond that very quickly once it becomes self-replicating and more intelligent, and it would come up with new goals that we can't even think of because we're limited with our evolutionary psychology.
Huh.
So, yeah, and they believe that would be a better thing. So ideally, you would create the AI, and then and there's the idea of artificial general intelligence making it friendly. This is kind of a point of contention between them as well. They don't know if that's even going to be possible to do, because, you know, once you get some of that intelligence, basically it can will on its own, and you can't really control that.
And that could potentially mean that they come to the decision that the human being indeed is an outdated version, and it should be eliminated or swept away, so to speak. Right.
Yes. Well, that's good, because that's a question I ask all of them. I ask, well, when we create these things, we don't know what they're going to do. So how do we get around this unknown factor? And isn't this dangerous? And why are we even doing this? The main question being, is this dangerous? Mm-hmm. And they all say, yes. They all just, and that's the common answer. They just all say, yes, it's dangerous. And mm-hmm. No, we don't know what we can do about it. And you know, that's the answer I get every time to that question.
But that's huge. Do they comprehend the moral obligation in a way to that they're potentially dealing with the future of mankind here?
Well, again, it's the idea of creating something better than the human, and this is core within their cosmos philosophy. If you're building something better and smarter than a human, then in comparison, the human doesn't matter so much. It's like if we were ants, and somehow the ants could create a human being. Would the ants' creation, that being the human being, care about the ants afterwards? Hmm. You know what I mean? And which one has more value in its life and its being? They would say the human being instead of the ants, because it can do so many more things and it can go beyond the consciousness level of the initial creation. So again, we get the idea of a creator god creating another god, which replaces the original. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Man becomes a god by creating, and then the new god that he creates replaces the old god. And this is an interesting theme to deal with as well, because it pops up in there.
That's just incredible. What do you know about the potential merging with this AI afterwards, meaning that human beings create AI and then we in some way take advantage of that by for instance, hooking us up to a worldwide mind or something similar where we can kind of gain access to the knowledge of the AI system. Isn't that also one of the dreams or aspirations of this movement?
Yeah, I would say that is the dream, is creating this technology. And then the only way to survive, they say, is to merge with the machinery, because there's no way to keep up with it intellectually. So you have to merge with it in order to survive. So creating it's a kind of catch-22 for humanity, because humanity has no chance once you create it other than to merge with it. And then, of course, the idea of the hive mind, the digital hive mind, that's already being created on the internet. And there's already artificial intelligence, pattern mining, collecting data, finding patterns within that data, and making predictions based on that data. And we already see websites that correspond to Twitter that do that at a just a we can see that as we as normal people, you know what I mean? We're not even in any sort of intelligence operation. Mm. We don't have any high clearances of any sort, but we can see trends in the internet through these websites that are
out there. But how, and what do you know about that? Do you know if they are programmed to learn and to study the patterns of the human beings that are on the internet and putting in data there and so forth? And is this a way for the AI system to become more intelligent progressively, or what do you know about how far ahead they are, so to speak, in terms of the development of artificial intelligence?
Well, yes. That's what it's all about, is creating these AI systems that mine patterns in order that it can find patterns within patterns and predict and learn based on that. And they have created these systems specifically, interestingly enough, for biological data. And that's a continuation of the Human Genome Project. And once again, Ben Gertzel's company, BioMind, creates artificial intelligence systems that pore over biological data, such huge amounts of data on human biology that no person can find patterns within all this. You need a machine to mine the patterns for you, to see the connections within like this huge, it would be nonsense, you know, it'd be like, well, it wouldn't be nonsense. You as a scientist can make sense of it, but just the sheer volume of data, way too much for one person. So that's why you get artificial intelligence machines to do that work for you. And then you can build off that. See, that's understanding human biology with machines. So already, you know, you want to get philosophical with this. The machines are already learning about human biology, and the idea is to improve on that biology. So the machines are already have a leg up, so to speak, on learning about what makes the human being tick. And it.
And that's yeah. Also kind of, well, I guess, dangerous in the sense that we're leaving the most intimate details about human physiology right away to a potential artificial intelligence right there.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the direction it's going, and that's you know, we're already there. People like to talk about the future when we talk about all these ideas, but what we often don't realize is that the future is now. Stuff is already happening. The trends are already there. So it's just a matter of looking at the trends now that are in effect and seeing where they're headed in the future.
Do you think it's enough by studying just what's in the official realm right now, Aaron, or do you know or are you aware of any kind of more, should we call them black ops programs that are running that are even more further ahead of the curve and that there actually exists much more sophisticated AI systems out there already, but we actually don't know about them?
Well, the problem with the black ops thing is that you don't know. You just don't know what's being done. But you can get a pretty good educated guess about what's going on just by knowing what is going on within what's being admitted. And again, when I spoke in interviews with these guys, they brought up the fact that the United States government probably has artificial intelligence systems. They're doing things that mining patterns and collecting data at a level that just we don't know about. Hmm. And James Hughes brought up the Total Information Awareness Project of
yes.
the Bush administration, and I'm sure many of the listeners will be aware of that. Their logo was the pyramid with the all-seeing eye. It's looking at the entire world. It's shining its light from it. It's shining its eye beam on the world, and it's got total information awareness. James Hughes told me that there's probably the DoD is probably continuing that program in one shape or form. We just don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I heard something that there was actually it was revamped and revitalized, but under a different name this time, or they chose a different logo because it was too upsetting for you know many people.
Yeah, people don't like that logo. Gee, I wonder why.
I wonder why, indeed. Just generally, then, about some of the remarks that Goertzel said to you regarding consciousness and so forth, Aaron. Do you agree with that, or do you think that it's an excuse in one way to say that it doesn't matter what we do because everything is consciousness anyway, so it doesn't matter what direction we take? Or from a philosophical, I guess, point of view, do you agree with what he said there to you?
Well, of course I don't agree 100% with these guys, but I would like to say that I understand where these guys are coming from. Like, I understand the cosmist idea of, okay, we see our place in the universe. We're just these small little creatures, and we can, through our limited selves, we can get a sense of something greater. But when they take that idea into the actual creation of manifesting that something greater here in the world, personally, I have a problem with that, and I see how things can get out of our hands really quick, and I get very bothered about just the contempt for the human being itself, because we ourselves are human beings. It's like we're denying our own merits and our own strengths and we're just saying, well, we're not good enough, so we need to make something better. And I take offense to that idea personally, because I'm a human being, and I know that we're capable of so much and so much more. And I don't think it necessarily has to do with this transhuman merge with machinery, because I know that we have lots of built-in things that many of us ignore on a daily basis and are made to ignore. So,
What about some of Goertzel's comment on post-genderism? That's another one of these factors that what we consider to be male and female, so forth, are actually going out the door as well, right?
Yes, well, that's an interesting thing in itself. Carlos and I made a series called Post-Genderism. It's a three-part video series. You can find that on www.transalchemy.com as well. And James Hughes, again, has written a whole paper on this idea. And that paper contains a lot of crazy... This is so crazy in the sense of I'm a normal human being. I have my normal human experience. And then you read a paper like this, and it just blows everything out of the water. Because transhumanism is about becoming something more than human. And when you talk about going beyond the human state of being, you're talking about the destruction of all things human, too. Or at least, I know that they wouldn't use the term destruction, but the term, they're building upon the human foundation, but changing it so fundamentally that things like male and female blend. And they talk about making knobs on your head where you could do different... you could go from male to female and different settings in between male and female. So you're sort of an androgyne, or you're some sort of weird thing in the middle there. And so that's the idea of post-genderism, just a little bit of it.
So what do you think that this stems from, Aaron? Again, we went a little bit into the philosophy, and I guess that there's much more to say there in regards to the kind of mystical or almost more occult aspects as well, and the ancient ideas that you mentioned. But overall, it seems to be like it's a resentment for the human being. And before we got cut off, I mentioned that basically many people can see that we're being attacked from many different angles now. We can talk about it from the point of view of vaccinations or laws that is in one way strangling the human being. The New World Order is expanding every day, and that's another form that this resentment in one way kind of takes shape. But do you see that in some of these people, or do you think that they come from a perspective that they think that they're doing something something good or something that will benefit the human being, Aaron?
Yes. Well, yes, they certainly think that they're doing something good. And specifically, again, in the context of postgenderism, the idea stated in that paper, postgenderism, is that our biological gender holds us back. So see, we as a male or a female, we're not going to experience the whole of creation, and we're fragmented. So the idea is to actually change not only the biology of the male and the female, but the neurology, the brain, the gendered human brain in that paper. So you would alter the male-specific brain patterns and the female-specific brain to liberate. And this is an act of liberation, supposedly, going beyond your own limited perspective.
That is interesting. And, I mean, do you think that this would be fine in the context of, let's say, Second Life or something like that, that this is something, an experience that people might try out in a digital environment, so to speak? Would that be fine? Or do you say that they're crossing the line when they start to meddling with people on the physical level, so to speak, when they go physically into the brain and make neurological alterations?
Yeah, well, all these things are blending now. And like you say, you bring up Second Life, virtual worlds, virtual realities. They're becoming more and more a part of our everyday lives. And that's where a lot of people are choosing to explore some strange new ways of existence. And they're escapes from reality, for one, and they're also deep trips into different realms of the psyche and some weird stuff. So some people choose to be human-animal hybrids in these worlds. And so Second Life is a place to first do that, and then you get into the level of genetic engineering and the creation of chimeras, and it becomes physically tangible. Whether or not what the extent of that will end up being, we don't know, but we can already see that people are choosing to do this in virtual worlds.
Mm. You mentioned Darwinism and kind of the evolution as a backdrop to all of this before. There is some interesting research that points towards the fact that eugenics plays a major role in this as well. What about that tie-in, Aaron? Is that something that you can see here as well? Is that a clear connection between eugenics and this kind of mentality, the improvement, the betterment of the human being, not only then genetically, because we're talking about a kind of a technological eugenics here as well, Aaron, aren't we?
Absolutely, yes. That's the idea. Yeah, it has everything to do with eugenics, because again, there's positive eugenics and negative eugenics within the idea of the eugenics movement altogether. There's positive and negative. And positive is using your mind to regenerate wisely, basically. That's the positive idea. And what that is to choose your mate wisely so that your offspring is better, basically. And that's the idea of positive eugenics. And then negative eugenics would be, you know, sterilizing the unfit and things like that. But transhumanism is all about the creation of a better state of being, going beyond human eventually. And this, it's interesting when you look at evolution, because the idea, the transhumanist idea is that this is a natural evolutionary process in the end. In one sense, they say that we're evolutionarily held back because of our biology. But in the other sense, they say, look, evolution's given us this tool, the human mind, which is our greatest tool that we have, And by use of the mind, we can reach this higher state of evolution. So this is a completely natural process because our brain is a natural thing. And that's how we become transhuman. Transhuman is the in-between phase where you become something greater. And that's going beyond nature and using art. So there's the idea of nature and there's art, and art is fast and nature slow. And that, as eugenicists and transhumanists, you hate the slow. Nature, too slow. We don't want anything to do with that. We want to speed up this process. We want to become gods. We want to build gods. We want to do it now. There's no reason not to. We're smart. Let's do this thing. That's the idea.
In terms of evolution there, that humanity has been given from whatever source, a brain and a set of tools in order to propel in certain areas. You know, the harnessing of fire is a set of technologies as well, if we look at it from that point of view. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with the perspective that they're coming from, but maybe not just the way they choose to play it out? Or do you say that they're wrong completely when it comes to the intelligence that humanity has been given, and hence the tools that man can develop?
Yeah, well, that's very interesting because, again, this is the old philosophy of, and you're talking about fire. And actually, when you talk about fire, you're talking about the Stone Age. You're talking about men in caves, cavemen. The Stone Age itself is interesting symbolically because it's an alchemy reference right there. And of course, trans alchemy, we're interested in alchemy and this side of the philosophy of transhumanism. So, okay, we start with the Stone Age, and then we eventually make our way up to the Information Age right now. So what is the stone? Stone is the foundation. It's a rock. Metals come from stones. You mine metals out of stone. So you start in the Stone Age, and then you eventually work your way up to the Golden Age, which and gold, of course, is alchemy again. That's what you want to work up to, and take the base metals, turn them into gold. So if you're really talking about the long haul here, you're starting in the Stone Age, which is the base metals, man living in ignorance. You know, he's bumbling around in the cave. He can't do anything. And then the Golden Age is where he perfects the stone, and he turns it into gold. So because it's all about turning the base metals into gold. Well, what does that mean? It means taking the raw materials of the earth, which are just a bunch of stones, they're just a bunch of base metals, and turning them into something useful, like machinery and highways and buildings. They all came out of the earth. You know, all this stuff we see in the earth didn't just build itself from space. It all came from materials in the earth.
Yeah.
And it's all useful things. It's building up a golden age bit by bit from the Stone Age.
Hmm. And that is true in one way, isn't it? Even if you agree with it or not, we see that kind of that what humanity is doing collectively is a form of alchemy in that sense. It's a transmuting of the one material, and we're out of that, we're producing something. We do, just as you say, houses with the heat in them, computers, the internet, all that thing. So in one way, you can't deny that it's happening. But the question is, if we agree with the way they're taking us, so to speak, these days, what's your point of view on that, Aaron?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's an excellent question, and something that's ignored all too often. We can see what's being built, but what does it mean? And I think what it means, you have to look at just the state of the average person. How does the average person feel in the modern world? Like, how do we feel with our lives today? And you look around and you see a lot of depressed and upset people living lives that they're not entirely happy with. But and you have to deal with that. You have to say, well, Why are so many people depressed? Why are so many people on medication? What's wrong with the world today? That's a basic question. And you have to admit that, look, things aren't perfect. And of course they're not going to be, but beyond that, it seems like we're living in an unnatural situation to me. This world that we're living in doesn't seem entirely natural. And I think that a lot of people are picking up on that, and that's what leads them to want change. But what is the nature of that change ultimately going to be? Is it going to be based on the same things we've already been doing to get into this situation? Or are we actually going to look at the root cause of the problem, which of course is has everything to do with our own psychological state of being? And I recently listened to your interview with Michael Tesserian. He gets very deep into that idea. So if anybody is interested in that, there's a lot of great things to be said there. I found that interesting.
Excellent. And in one way, is the promise that we're given by the transhumanist movement is that if they only are allowed to continue their path towards perfection, eventually we will all be happy, because it seems to me that, just as you say, many people identify different problems for different reasons. And I guess what you're arguing here, Aaron, as well, is that many of us are feeling that way because of the fact that we're not living in a natural state. We've gone into an artificial world in that sense, and that's what we're feeling. But now we're offered these solutions by the transhumanists to just continue with much of the same, and we're expected to get different results out of that. And that's a kind of an oxymoron right there, isn't it?
Well, exactly. And again, we get the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, right?
Yeah.
So we're being insane. We just expect something different by doing the same thing over and over again. And you apply this idea to all of history and prehistory, eons and ages in which we personally haven't lived. But if we're intelligent enough, we can see that there were people here on this earth before us, and they had their own lives, and if you're wise enough, you can relate to those people that have come and gone throughout the ages and see that, look, this thing is more than just me and my little life. This is the history of the world we're talking about here, and what is my place in that?
Yeah. How do you see the connection between these types of scientific principles that you're looking into and the technological developments and basically the new world order? We can see the surveillance society obviously is the most right now clear way that this is being seen or defined. We can talk about microchips in everything, RFID tags, or even what they call intelligent houses or haptic devices, where for instance you can simply walk on the floor and a set of microchips, RFID tags or something else, are able to measure the weight and the footprint of the human being walking on that floor. And that's actually a way of kind of doing a biometrical signature on you, meaning that you might touch a wall or just walk across the floor somewhere, and the house might instantaneously recognize that it's you who's walking there. We have all these, again, kind of intrusive technologies blooming all around us now. Can you see that connection between these fields here as well, Aaron, or is it not just kind of just connected yet, so to speak? Or where do you see that this is going, rather?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely connected to that. Yeah, and you're talking about smart homes is what you're referring to, and yes, also the idea of ubiquitous computing, in that you start putting computers into everything, including your homes, and sensors and RFID chips and tags, and so everything is a computer, or there's a computer all around you reading the information of everything within the environment that you live in and extrapolating that data and interpreting it and in a very real sense monitoring everything. And that's a big that's the big idea with these autonomous systems and smart living and ubiquitous computing. It has everything to do about monitoring. And you read the official reports and they all say this. They all say that, like, oh, yeah, these systems, these automatic systems of living, they all set up surveillance and monitoring. And what is the public going to think about this? Mm-hmm. And And it's all about getting the public to accept these ideas, not immediately, but by degrees. And they say this. I actually got a report off of Red Ice Creations a few months ago. It was from the Royal Academy of Engineers, and it was autonomous systems. It talks about all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it brought together many stakeholders in these different industries. And of course, when they talk about stakeholders, they're talking about the owners of these technologies and the people who are going to profit from them. So they're talking about people who are going to make money off of this. And they talk about, well, what are the trends today with surveillance? And they see that people complain about surveillance, but at the same time, they accept all these technologies that do indeed surveil them, like cell phones, which they mention overtly. People complain about them in that they're trackable, but at the same time, they use them anyway. Hmm. So, you know, they're saying that you can get people to double think, basically. Like, you can get them to complain about something, but at the same time, accept it. So it's all about doing that and building up little by little and going further and further until your house has a computer in it and you have a chip in you and your house can monitor you. And, well, you might not even need a chip in you. With an advanced enough house, it could, like, read your body heat signature or whatever. I don't
know. Your brain waves or whatever? You know,
yeah, your brain waves. Yeah, it could do that. And we don't know because the technology isn't here yet, but all this stuff is in development, like all these things. There's so many technologies in development. No one person can even keep up with the rate of scientific development. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. And the average person's idea of what's in technology actually is so far behind what is actually to develop brain chips. They're ready.
Yeah.
They're ready to be used. It's just a matter of when. Achieving acceptance by degrees. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. Very good point, Aaron. And I mean, again, we might understand some of the dangers with this, or we might just be upset over the fact that we don't want this in our bodies, in our lives, so we don't want to be tracked and monitored. But let's say a person who says, yeah, you know, I got nothing to hide, I got nothing to worry about, you know, I don't mind, I wouldn't mind that. What do you see? What would you say to a person like that in terms of the dangers with all these kinds of systems? If we take the whole picture in together here, so to speak, and see and paint a picture of where things potentially are going, what is the big danger, as you see it, with all these systems going into place, Aaron?
Well, the big danger, again, is that we as individuals don't know the big picture. We don't know all of the scientific developments and technologies that are out there, and we don't know the level of advancement. As I said, most people don't understand what is developed. So they take this entire process for granted and that, oh, you know, what's a big deal? Like, they don't understand that everything that they do digitally can be data-based. It can be saved as a computer file, and then theoretically, an AI could pore over that information and mine patterns out of our digital behavior and create an entire psychological profile on us. And beyond that, it could project our future behavior. And there are systems that are doing this already. And that's what this is all about. It's about prediction and and when you get into prediction, it's about controlling society as a whole. And society as a whole is made up of individuals. That's us. So it's controlling the individual human being. So it's all about controlling your behavior in the end. And to deny that is just foolish because that's what it's about.
Absolutely. Aaron, I want to ask you here, do you have time for us? You want to continue with us for another segment? We'd love to talk more with you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It feels like we just started.
Absolutely, exactly. But before we do that, Aaron, I do want to help to not only plug your guys' website so people know where to go to check out more of your work, but tell us a little bit generally here in the last couple of minutes about where the film is heading. And are you guys seeking support or seeking even financial help to get the project up and running and finished? Or what's the deal right now, so to speak, with your film project, Aaron?
Well, yes, absolutely. We are seeking financial assistance of any kind. We're applying for grants, but if there's anybody who's interested in these things and could possibly help us out, please send us an email at transalchemy@gmail.com. And as I say, we've made short productions already. If you want to get an idea of what the full documentary is going to be like, watch the All-Seeing AI video, which is up now. Either go to www.transalchemy.com. It's on the main page. You can watch it there or search in YouTube. Search TransAlchemy in Google and a bunch of our videos will pop up. But yes, the documentary will basically be a longer version of that video, the All-Seeing AI.
Okay, really good. Again, the website is transalchemy.com. Head on over there, check out some of the work that Aaron and Carlos are doing. And again, the email address for you guys who want to get in contact, transalchemy@gmail.com. Drop them an email if you want to be in some way, get in touch with Aaron and Carlos. Okay, well, we're going to continue talking more than in our members section, Aaron. Thank you so much for this first segment there. Stay with us, and we'll be back with more. Second Hour with Aaron France is coming up as we go deeper into the occult and mystical roots of the philosophy of transhumanism. We talk about gods, Prometheus, Lucifer, black ops projects, nanotechnology, neocortical microcircuits, the Blue Brain Project, control, alchemy, predicting the future, and humankind splitting up into two strands. A very interesting second hour coming up. All information on how to listen can be found on our website, redicecreations.com. We'll talk more after this break.